Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Lightworkers Lounge. I am here sitting next to someone very special. I call her my spiritual therapist on Instagram, but she's actually an emotional health consultant. She's published 2 books and 1 workbook, April Adams. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, I'm so excited to have you on the show because I've spoken about you on Instagram, on my podcast, and people are like, where did you find her? And actually, it's funny, I didn't find you, my mom did, because I was just going through a tough time with my divorce and moving, and life was difficult, and my mom just like, I don't even know how she found you, but she's like, look at her website, and as soon as I read just one quote from your website, I was like, this is my person, I need to go see her. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited. I've been wanting to. I think you mentioned it on your first visit to see me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, I need to go on there.
Lightworkers Lounge.
So I'm glad it happened.
Yes. So you are an emotional health consultant, but you weren't always that your whole life. So you used to work in a spa and have your cosmetology license.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go from that to your role now?
So even back then, the school that I went to for cosmetology was holistic.
So I started out
an Aveda concept school, and they were really one of the first beauty companies that were way into doing everything really naturally, their facials all taught lymphatic drainage and all of this stuff. And as soon as I graduated, there was this older woman that worked at the spa with me who taught reflexology. So she showed me reflexology like right out of school. And
wow.
So, you know, there I was 21 doing pedicures, but I was doing healing work in the pedicures I didn't even know that was healing work.
Like, wow.
I had no idea that anytime I was giving someone a foot massage or whatever that I was healing them. But clients would tell me I was a healer or that I had very healing energy or that I had very soothing energy.
Like, what did you think
very
of that?
Young
like,
age,
I
thought it was cool. Like it made me feel special and all of that. But I didn't really know what it meant because I was, you know, it was the early 90s at that point. You know, so
no one was talking about Lightworkers Lounge.
People weren't really talking about that kind of stuff at that point, so it was a little weird, but also very flattering. So then, fast forward 20 years or so.
Yeah.
15, 20 years. And I worked at a couple of spas that really sucked.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of drama, and it just wasn't very stable and positive and so on. Plus, I was not happy in my romantic relationship and was super obsessive about that. And so everything was kind of blowing up in my life all at once. And this woman came in to get a pedicure with me, and she taught Reiki. And we just clicked right away. So
there it is. There it is.
So I signed up for the next batch of Reiki classes that she was teaching because I was kind of at this point in my romantic relationship where I'd been reading a few self-help books and stuff and was trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
And I basically knew that I needed to do something that was just for me.
Yeah.
Something that wasn't about the relationship and trying to better that and all of that, but I needed something just
take
for
notes.
Me.
That is so right. Just for you. Sorry.
Yeah. So I took the first Reiki class, not knowing what to expect, not knowing whether I believed in it or not, whether it was anything, you know, that I would enjoy or anything. And as soon as I was activated, I could feel the energy in my hands like a physical force. Like I could, it was like I was holding a ball of electricity. And I'm sitting there looking at my hands going, I should be able to see this. Like, this is so strong. I should be able to see this. And I couldn't see it, but there was just this instantaneous, like, this means there is something else, something divine, something bigger, something out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I was supposed to be doing.
Wow.
So there was this instant knowing, feeling like I had come home.
Come home.
Yeah.
And how old were you when that happened?
35, maybe, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I continued to take all of the rest of the Reiki courses and loved them, and the spa I was working in allowed me to offer a few Reiki sessions.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but what was happening was it became spiritual for me very quickly. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't only about the energy at that point. There were intuitive messages coming through. There was a lot of intuitive stuff coming through for the clients. There was a lot of spiritual stuff, and I was starting to be shown to sing and do all these vocal toning things, and all this stuff was happening. Whoa. And I'm like, this isn't right in a spa environment. People right. aren't coming to a spa for spiritual stuff. They're not coming to be sung to. And, and plus, I wanted to be able to take my time with people and talk to them before and after their sessions and to hear about what was going on in their lives and to share whatever intuitive stuff had come through while I was working on them.
Wow.
So I started looking for my own space, because at a spa, it's like 1 hour. You know,
and you're done,
like
get
one
out.
1 hour with that person, and then somebody else needs that room. So get in, get out, you're
That's
done.
So true.
And, you know, no spiritual stuff and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I started looking for my own space, found it very quickly, went part-time at the spa, and started running my own business part-time. And kind of quickly started getting a clientele, mm-hmm. doing energy work and spiritual coaching.
Okay.
So that's where everything started, and actually it was right across the street from where I am now that
Oh my gosh, that's I did too that. Funny.
Yeah. And it just started taking off, and I think within a year of taking my final Reiki class, I left the spa entirely and had shifted completely to my own business.
Oh my gosh.
Doing energy work and spiritual consulting.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so perfect. I didn't know that about you, which I totally resonate with, because I started out as a holistic health coach, teaching people about holistic eating and lifestyle practices. And then I noticed as well, during my sessions, we would not talk about food, dairy-free, gluten-free. We would just talk about our twin flames and our astrology and emotional stuff going on. And that's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah.
I was doing half and half and then full-time the podcast. Mm-hmm. So, whoa.
Yeah. And it's amazing, once you start doing the thing you're supposed to do, how quickly it shifts over.
Very quickly.
And, you know, I get a lot of clients who ask, what should I be doing with my life? Or how do I make a transition from doing this stupid office job to what I would love to be doing?
So many people ask me that.
And, you know, one thing, the intuitive answer is always, stop asking other people what you're supposed to be doing.
Ooh, take notes again. That's right.
That's the first thing.
Your friends, your family, like, anybody.
Yeah. Stop giving your power away to other people and asking them what your purpose is. You know,
because only you know.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, any psychic should not be answering that question for you.
No.
That is something that you have to come upon yourself.
Yeah.
So, one of the main things that I like to tell people, because I'm a little bit more of a realist, I'm not the whole leap and the net will appear.
You're a Capricorn.
You know? Yeah, I'm a Capricorn.
Which I love. I love that realness.
Yeah. And what I like to tell people is to just start dipping your toes in. Do whatever you can of that thing that you love, even if you have to do it in your downtime when you're not at work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, volunteer doing that thing in the evenings, or get...
Go to Reiki classes on the weekend.
Right. Get an office space that you can just run services on the weekends for now. And, you know, just do whatever it is that you can do to be in touch with the thing you love doing when you're not doing your work.
Have you ever had clients say, like, I don't even know what I'm passionate about anymore. Mm. I can't feel what brings me joy.
Yeah.
Because I've had a lot of clients myself who tell me that. And what do you say to them?
Well, usually I find that that's people who are kind of loaded down with so much difficulty and so much suppression, and there's just been so many hardships in their lives that they can't even see
what brings them joy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't even get in touch with that, because everything has been so heavy and they've been so programmed that they have to do the 9-to-5 job. They have to have that secure job. They have to do this and this and this, and just kind of be the robot. And so,
So instead of focusing on what brings you joy, they need to focus on uprooting all those subconscious traumas and beliefs.
Right. Right. Yeah. Clearing all of the difficulties and the misery and the triggers and, you know, fears and all of that stuff can free you up to be more in touch with your higher self and your own passions and what you enjoy. And really, that's the joy and the curiosity and the pleasure and the passion is what leads you toward what you're supposed to be doing.
Yep.
So whatever it is that lights you up. But sometimes when life is so hard, you have no clue what lights you up, and that's okay.
You haven't been lit up in so long. You don't even know anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's okay to be in that place. You just have to do what you can to heal yourself emotionally and make the realizations you need to make so that you can slowly move your way out of that place so that you can start to feel passion and excitement and curiosity and joy and follow that toward what you need to be doing.
And it will come back.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, my own misery was what led to my passion.
Me too. To figuring out being a holistic health.
Yeah. Right. Because I was so miserable in my romantic relationship and then also incidentally with my job at the same exact time that trying to figure out how to get out of that misery is exactly what led me into doing what I do.
Oh my gosh. This is why I love you. Like, you take everything in my head and put it in the most perfect words. Me too. It was being diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, saying you'll never have children, you have to have major surgery to remove an organ, and then I was also unhappy in my relationship and my job, and it's just everything crumbled to the ground.
Yeah.
And then I found myself.
And that's kind of where we have to be. Like, in order to change, you have to kind of hit some sort of rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time before that point, like, if you're just kind of coasting along, doing your thing, and you're not recognizing just how miserable you are, and you're just kind of doing the status quo, you're not going to change.
Yep.
It takes getting to this, like, horrible end-of-the-world feeling of, I can't live like this anymore, before most people are willing to do anything to change their lives and their patterns and those kinds of things.
That is so, so true. Oh, my gosh. Now, your approach to therapy is hypnosis, energy work, and coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So, aside from Reiki, what other energy work do you do?
So,
now you have this comfortable bed in your office we're sitting next to. It's like a massage table.
Yeah.
Is that for Reiki or?
Well, I started out with Reiki, as I said, but it kind of quickly transformed into more than that. So I developed my own healing modality called Essence, which I wrote about
in my first book,
Essence.
Yeah.
So I teach that in that book. And then more recently, I took a series of courses through Marconyx. And Marconyx is kind of like, it's directed only at light workers, although regular people can have Marconyx done, but it's speaking light workers' language, and they only market to light workers because it's meant to upgrade you. It's not a healing modality. It's an upgrade modality.
Ah.
So it's meant to
like
help.
Like upgrade to 5D?
Or beyond.
See, a lot of people listening think that 5D is the highest. Can you share just a little bit about that? We spoke about that.
Well, I'm trying to think of what's in the Marconyx books as opposed to what I've learned in person because we sign non-disclosure forms when we go to Marconyx events. But the books talk about that actually up to 5D and even up to 12D sometimes.
12D?
Is actually part of a karmic trap that we've been stuck in for millennia.
Ah, we spoke about this.
So there's just these galactic beings who've decided that we are going to be punished or stuck or something in this loop of trying to fix our karma.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole Buddhist thing of like you constantly need to upgrade your soul and get to the next level and fix your problems and all of that. It's actually kind of ridiculous if you think about it because we're souls.
Yeah.
How does a soul need to evolve? A soul is fine at its inception.
It's pure at its inception.
Yes. So why would a soul need to constantly upgrade and learn and all of that? A soul is just, it's part of source and it's, like, what's wrong with it?
So I never looked at it that way because of all the stuff I've read conditioned me.
So here we are on the earth plane, which is like this hamster wheel.
Yeah, say that again.
That we're stuck in.
Yeah.
So we're just constantly going through lifetime, trying to fix something.
Pain, suffering.
And those 12 dimensions are all in part that karmic trap, that hamster wheel that we've been stuck in. So we actually want to get beyond the 12 And from my understanding, there's like 144.
Oh, geez.
And that was last I heard. I haven't been in Marconics for like a year, year and a half now. So for all I know, they've discovered more. I don't know. But
whoa. What is their definition of a light worker? No, you said they market to light workers. I'm just curious how they define one.
Well, I think it's just people who know that they're here to change things.
Yeah, that's mine too.
Yeah.
To uplift and...
Right.
It's
people who've become aware of there being something more.
Do you think everyone's born a light worker? We just kind of lose the ability to see it or sense it?
I think we're all born with abilities and connectedness, and we all are souls in human bodies.
Yeah.
I think some are younger and some are older, and we all have different purposes. So, and some are good purposes and some not so good purposes.
Yeah.
So we've all got, you know, these different roles to play. So I don't know that everyone's necessarily a light worker, but I think we're all born with certain capabilities and we're just not taught how to use them.
Yeah. We're taught to quiet them, not recognize them.
Yeah.
If anything, stay in that 3D hamster wheel.
Yeah.
And don't say anything. Now, I pulled a quote, a couple of quotes from your website that I just love and resonate with so much. The first one is, if you've read every self-help book but still get triggered by life. Can you explain more on that, on how your energy work and your therapy sessions, how do they fix that?
Yeah, so part of what I did originally when I was struggling was, you know, going to therapy. I was reading every self-help book I could get my hands on. And they helped. You know, it helped me feel a little bit
temporarily,
better.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it would just help me feel a little better. It was not like the problem wasn't gone. It's just that I had better coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Or I could consciously shift the way that I thought about something, but I still had to talk myself down. I was still being triggered. I still had the obsessive thoughts. I still had that stuff going on.
Yeah.
It's just that now I had a better way to look at it or to talk myself down when the thing was happening, or I had ways to distract myself from it or ways to cope with the problem, or ways to deal with the feelings when they were coming up, but not any way to cure it or make it go away permanently.
Completely.
Right. So, you know, eventually I was shown tools to specifically deal with those things on the subconscious level where they really need to be dealt with, because you can fix everything you want consciously. Like, we can all wander around knowing how I should react, how I should think about things, so that I should forgive.
Don't we?
Right.
Yeah.
And then our subconscious will believe something else entirely, so we sabotage ourselves, or we're still triggered by things that we know we shouldn't be, and we'll, you know, be sitting there going, this is ridiculous that I'm bothered by this thing. Or, you know, we can pay lip service and say, oh yeah, I forgive that person, or oh, I'm not going to give that any of my energy.
I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
Oh, but, really?
But you're still dreaming about it. You're still obsessing about it. You're still hurt when something similar happens. And that's what I wanted to fix. That was what was still holding me back, and I was seeing was still holding other people back as well. Yeah. Was that, you know, the need to have every level of your brain believing that you were able to move on from that thing.
I think a lot of the self-help books are, for me, it's Abraham Hicks YouTube videos. They help you on a very surface level. It's like a Band-Aid, but that rotten egg is still in your subconscious mind.
Yeah.
And it'll come out as soon as you're triggered again.
Right, yeah.
I'll practice affirmations for a week, but then I'll get bored with it, and then I'll go right back to where I was.
Yes.
You're like, oh, God.
Both with manifesting and affirmations. Affirmations is just saying words to yourself. And I don't care how many times you say those words to yourself, unless you can get the proper amount of emotion going or you do something to try to activate your subconscious mind while you're doing it, you're just saying words to yourself. And you're just negating the feelings that are coming up that you actually need to deal with.
Tap into the feeling. What would be like to have that? But like we said in our last session together, how can I when I've never experienced it?
Yeah, if you don't know what something feels like, it's really hard to affirm that into your brain out of nowhere.
It's impossible.
Yeah. And the same thing with manifesting. When you're trying to manifest something, if you are holding an opposite belief or feeling or vibration to that thing, you can't manifest it no matter what practices you use.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to convince the subconscious mind that you're safe in a situation that you're afraid of, where you perceive a threat, or that you no longer believe the thing that you've been believing all your life that's been holding you back from doing mm-hmm. that. If you believe that it's not possible on some level to achieve what you want, then it's not going to happen. Yeah. If you believe you don't deserve it, it's not going to happen.
Yes, that's
and
right.
You can believe on one level that you do deserve it and another level that you don't deserve it. Mm-hmm. And we have to address that part of you that believes you don't deserve it so that you can get that out of the way and actually manifest the thing that you yeah. want.
So do you believe in manifesting?
Yeah.
Yes?
Oh, yeah.
It's just more, in your opinion, it's more than just writing affirmations in a notebook or creating a dream board.
Exactly.
Like, what? How would you say you should manifest to bring things into your life? Especially when they're so far from anything you've ever experienced.
Well, the first thing I usually do is kind of look at what my patterns have been so far around that thing. Like, do I have any mental or emotional resistance to that thing? Mm-hmm. Like, when I was looking for success in my business.
Yeah.
And trying to build a business to where I wanted it to be, there were parts of me that were afraid of success because, you know, I had the belief that the government would take all my money if I made a lot of money.
Yep.
Or that people would judge me for, you know, having a lot of money or having success. That I wouldn't have any time for my own pursuits and things I enjoyed. There were all kinds of things that I believed about being successful that made part of me not really want success. So if you're, you know, part of you is going, I want success and I want lots of money, and part of you is going, but wait, do I really? Then how are you going to manifest that?
Mm-hmm.
So I start...
Write it down all you want, but the subconscious beliefs are there. That's just blocking it completely.
So I start doing clearing work on any fears of, you know, what if those things happen, or, you know, anything that I'm afraid of in any of that, and I undo whatever beliefs I have around that are negative that might be blocking me.
Yeah.
And then I'll put in positive beliefs into my subconscious, not just repeat them to myself in the mirror while I'm driving around, but actually, like, implant them into my subconscious mind. Incidentally, just before Stephanie mentioned me on Instagram and a billion people all contacted me at once from that, I trust the universe to provide for me.
Oh, no way.
And then, boom,
truth bombs.
Here it goes. Yeah.
Wow.
So, that's...
Now, how do you implant? Do you use one of the click tracks that we use, or...
Yeah, so...
Without giving too much of it away, because I know they're a pivotal part of your program, but this is what you do as part of your programs that you offer people. Yeah. Are they hypnosis? How would you describe the click
track? They're kind of a hypnosis... Well, they're a combination of, like, five different modalities into one.
What's the difference between meditating and hypnosis? Is there one?
Well, they're very similar states, typically.
Okay.
Because traditional hypnosis is relaxing the conscious mind so much that you get it out of the way.
Oh.
Which typically means getting into the theta brainwave state, mm-hmm. which is also the state that you get into when you're really good at meditating.
Ah, okay.
So they're really similar. And, you know, it feels like when you're first falling asleep.
Yep.
It feels like when you're meditating, it feels like when you're in a deep hypnotic state. They're all very similar
because
it's the same brainwave levels that you're in.
When I do the click track that you gave me to work on at home, every time I do it, towards the last 2 minutes of it, I'm in that state where I'm like, am I asleep or am I awake?
Right. Yeah.
But it works.
Yeah. And a bunch of the other tools get like that too, because, you know, the one that you're talking about, you're tapping your fingers to certain sounds and all of that. And that's part of also what's creating the hypnosis. Through distraction instead of relaxation.
Because so many people are like, I can't meditate no matter what I do.
Yeah.
But with your click track, you have to kind of participate, and it kind of forces your brain to meditate.
Yeah. So basically, hypnosis is just getting the conscious mind out of the way so that you can access the subconscious. It's kind of like removing the guard from the door so that you can get in.
Good analogy.
And so you can get in there and get the job done on the subconscious level. And typically what most people think of as hypnosis is making you very, very sleepy or relaxed. So that's
the pendulum in front of you.
Putting the conscious mind to sleep or in such a deep state of relaxation that it's not interfering.
Yeah.
what the click tracks do is they distract you. So it's a distraction hypnosis because it gives the conscious mind a job to do. So it's still moving the conscious mind out of the way. It's just giving it a job in order to get it out of the way instead of making it all sleepy and relaxed. But I find that usually most people, after they've been doing it for a while, still go into that theta state, even though they're, you know, so they're both getting the distraction hypnosis plus the relaxation hypnosis. But at first, it's not usually very relaxing. It's a little invigorating
at first. It's so emotional.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, another quote from your website was, "If you've tried all the spiritual practices but still feel blocked, then you need April Adams." And this is so true because I just posted something within the last month about cutting energetic cords. I think you and I spoke about that a month ago.
Yeah.
And I loved the analogy you used of like spinning around with blades, cutting an energetic cord. You can, and this is all individual. However you want to visualize cutting an energetic cord from someone, you can picture uprooting it from your solar plexus chakra, your heart chakra. But a lot of people, it worked for them because cutting energetic cords can be very powerful. But there were some people who said, "I did the meditation, but I still feel connected to that person that I no longer want a connection with."
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that doesn't work for some people?
Well, I think to some extent they want that connection still there.
Still.
And it really has to be a full-on choice. And you can understand that somebody isn't good for you, but you can still also miss certain aspects of them.
Yeah.
And so there's always this part of us that's a little bit resistant to letting go of something. Or, I even tell people to cut negative ties with spouses and partners on a daily basis sometimes.
Yeah, I was mentioning that because just because you cut an energetic cord to someone doesn't mean a new one can't form, right?
Yeah, and it also doesn't mean that you're cutting any love ties with that person. It's about cutting the ick.
The tainted cord. That's no longer a pretty color. It's black and murky.
Right, yeah. I mean, if your hearts are still meant to be connected, you can leave your hearts connected. Like, that can still be there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all of those negative webs that have formed between you through all of the different negative interactions. That's what needs to be cut and severed so that it's not affecting you and continually pulling you back and making you think about them and what they did to you or what you did to them and how everything played out over and over and over again.
Sabotaging the relationship, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I should have mentioned that in my episode. That is such a good point to make, that you should do that routinely with your parents who you don't want out of your life completely, but you've got just tainted energy cords with them.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when, say, someone goes and gets Reiki therapy, and they feel okay in the beginning after they receive that therapy, but then a couple of days later, they're back to just feeling depressed and crappy.
Mm-hmm.
How are these spiritual practices not working for them? You know what I mean?
Well, I feel like they're not really accessing the subconscious mind.
Yeah, they're like, I meditate every day, I do yoga every day, but I still feel like shit.
Yeah, so, you know, you're not dealing with the issues at their roots. And that's, you know, the main thing is that you have to get the problem at its original root, and you have to get it on the subconscious level.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you do.
Yeah.
And so many epiphanies with you. It's amazing.
So, you know, to me, spiritual work is amazing. And I use it. Okay, so the analogy that I like to use is that, like, if your issues, like all of your issues and your problems, are a brick wall, the subconscious work takes all of the bricks out. But then you're still left with, like, all this debris and, you know, mortar and all of that stuff. And so the energy work clears that for me. Like, that's kind of how I see it. So it's not as though only the subconscious work works and there's, you know, that's the only thing that will ever work. But I feel that also the spiritual work is beneficial, but it doesn't do everything and it doesn't often get the problem gone at its root.
Yeah.
So the two together, dealing with the subconscious and kind of cleaning up whatever's left behind with the
energy. The dirt and debris from breaking down
right,
the wall.
Right.
Wow.
That's what really makes a huge difference in the clearing. And of course, you still need to understand things consciously. I mean, mm-hmm. if you don't understand why you need to forgive somebody in the first place, if you do subconscious work to forgive somebody and you clear whatever anger or whatever you have toward them, if you consciously believe that you still want to be angry at them because you're a victim to what they did to you, mm-hmm. then you're still going to suffer and you're going to recreate those problems because you believe consciously that yeah. you should still be mad at them because they did something bad to you.
Mm-hmm.
So we do need that conscious understanding. We do need the therapy or the self-help or, you know, those conscious understandings and the spiritual yeah. practices and understandings. But we also have to deal with it on the subconscious level. And a lot of times, if there's anything left, we need to also energetically or spiritually clear things out. But I find that a lot of times, if I clear something on the subconscious level, it'll clear chakra blockages.
On its own?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. So it tends to clear things a lot. And, I mean, really, if you think about all of the different levels of where dis-ease shows up for mm-hmm. us, it starts out mentally and emotionally.
Yes.
You know, with different things that happen to us and their traumas, and we keep replaying them, or we keep being afraid of something, or we keep trying to suppress something. And that builds up and creates issues in the body. Yeah. Well, first it creates issues in the energy body and blocks chakras and stuff yeah. like that. And then that creates physical issues in disease. The body. So if you clear those things on the subconscious level
yeah.
and help your brain deal with the trauma or the fear or whatever it is, then the energy clears around that thing
mm-hmm.
and then the body heals.
Yeah, that's what I did as a holistic health coach. Mm-hmm. I would tell people, okay, let's get rid of your stress and your worry and your anxiety. And once they did, it didn't matter if they changed their diet. Their IBS was gone. Their migraines were gone. Mm-hmm. It's so funny how that's correlated.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that is your approach to therapy, is uprooting things from the subconscious and then clearing it out with energy work,
mm-hmm.
which is so different. Yeah. People need you. We need more April Adams in the world.
And I want to, you know, make sure that people understand I'm not a traditional therapist or counselor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a consultant than anything
emotional
else.
Emotional health consultant. Yes, I love
because
that.
Because I teach you the tools that you can use for the rest of your life. So
yep.
I feel like a lot of times with therapy and counseling, and sometimes even with spiritual teachers or, you know, Reiki practitioners and stuff, there's this expectation that you're going to keep coming back for a really long time and that it's going to take this long period of time to deal with your stuff
yep.
and that you need somebody else almost to do that mm-hmm. for you or to help you through it. And for me, I just want to teach people, this is how you use these tools. Here's how you empower yourself to be able to deal with anything that comes your way
throughout life
when it comes up. And now, you know, let me really hardcore boot camp you through how to use these tools so that yeah. you really know how to do them and you're confident. And then you can go on from there and just do it yourself. Like, you don't, yeah. you don't need me forever.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to need me forever.
Yes.
And maybe once in a while if something crops up and they're like, I don't really know how to clear this issue. Great. I'd love to hear from you. Come on back. But
yeah.
I don't want people coming every week for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. You want to get
to
them
see
going.
Me for the same problem.
Right.
I want them to actually get relief and not need to keep going to see
Learn
somebody in order to feel
need.
Better. Yeah. So, I mean, that starts with the subconscious tools, and that's what tends to get the strongest, most permanent results.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I love activating people's healing abilities for them or teaching people how to activate their own healing abilities so that you can also do energy work on yourself or meditate, even if your mind is usually too busy or whatever. But definitely from what I've learned and what I've experienced and what my clients have experienced,
mm-hmm.
the subconscious work tends to get the biggest results the yep. most quickly and the most permanently.
Yeah.
So that's where I like to start. And then if people want more, they can do more.
Do more. I think I've been working with you since October-ish.
Yeah.
And the epiphanies that I've had and the light you've shined on some things in my subconscious has just been mind-blowing. Like, things I never knew I held, beliefs about myself that were affecting my marriage, my relationship with friends, my relationship at work was just, holy crap. Especially, I had a podcast about this, of feeling unwanted.
Right.
How we worked through that subconscious belief all the way back until I was a fetus because I was an unplanned pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I spoke about on Instagram a few days ago. And I want to talk about that now because people are just blown away by this. But we pick up trauma and pain as a fetus in our mother's womb,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Even goes as far back as being eggs in our grandmother's womb.
Yeah.
Right?
And I mean, even more than that, because with epigenetics,
mm-hmm.
which is the study of how our ancestors' genes pass down to us genetically, yeah. like
their
our
trauma.
DNA is carrying our grandparents and our great-grandparents and our great-great-grandparents' traumas and mm-hmm. triggers. So we can be triggered by loud noises or battle-like sounds because our grandfather went to war.
Yeah. It's true. It's so true.
And it's meant to be a survival mechanism. Like, that's supposed to keep us safe in a similar situation. And that's great and all, but most of us aren't actually
in war.
In a
and we're not
situation.
In the Great Depression anymore.
And even if we were, we wouldn't want to be traumatized and triggered by bullet sounds because...
Yes,
because
exactly.
we'd need to, you know, be brave in the face of war. So a lot of times the triggers that are passed down to us and the pain that gets passed down to us and the fears and all of that aren't really serving us in the way
they're
that...
They're not ours.
Yeah.
It's baggage.
In the way that evolution intended for it to be helping us
mm-hmm.
because it's not catching up with our technology. It's not catching up with the level of safety that most of us live with on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there are people who live in gang areas or places in the world that experience a lot of violence. And,
right.
and I don't want to, you know, put that down or ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
But to people that are listening to this, for the most part,
mm-hmm. That's
we're
right.
not constantly under threat of being shot or
yes.
murdered or raped or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, we're not constantly needing
right.
to be watching out for that. And not only that, but it doesn't really serve us to be constantly anxious and afraid of those things anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Cautious is great, you know? Like, absolutely, be cautious.
Yeah.
But anxious isn't going to help you. That's just going to make you more distracted, more
mm-hmm.
stupid, more
sick. Yeah, it blocks a lot of things.
Yeah, and it makes you feel sick.
Yeah.
Like, the more you're walking around with anxiousness and, you know, tension...
That's right.
...the more you're physically going to become
yeah.
ill anyway.
And so many people have anxiety nowadays and depression,
mm.
and they don't even know why. They just say, I was born with it, or it's genetic.
Right.
No,
yeah.
it's not.
Yeah. And, you know, I parts of it are genetic, and there are some people who do have chemical
imbalances.
Issues and imbalances
mm-hmm.
and things like that, but most of us, it's a taught thing. Like,
yeah.
We're just taught that there's not enough. We're taught that there's lack, that we're in danger, that
yes.
we're under threat. And our subconscious is also designed
yep.
to constantly be looking for what could possibly be a mental,
yep.
emotional, or physical threat to us.
Yeah.
So we're always on the lookout for that, too. So both what we're taught throughout life, what we experience throughout life, and what our subconscious is designed to do in order to protect
and
us.
And our DNA from our great-great-grandparents.
yes. So all of these different things are convincing us. We need
mm-hmm.
to be anxious. We need to be on full alert. We need to be watching out for the next bad thing that's going to happen to us.
If I achieve success, it'll just fall through the floor, and
right.
I won't have it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So
mm-hmm.
that is exactly the kind of thing that keeps us from being able to get to where we want to be.
Yep.
And we have to get that at its root, like wherever that came from in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and clear it out of there so we stop running that programming
yep.
and stop blocking what it is that we actually want.
Exactly. And I'll use myself as an example that we've spoke about a lot in our sessions, is I have this underlying being unwanted. And, you know, all the women in my family have been divorced, so I'm sure they've all experienced a time in their lives where they felt unwanted.
Mm.
And I truly think I carried that down from my great-grandma, my grandma, and my mom, and now me, and also being an unplanned pregnancy, and then growing up with a brother who has autism, so I was kind of just naturally kicked to the side.
Right.
And I think it affected my marriage, it affected the end of my marriage, and it still affected my relationships afterwards, and my friendships. I mean, every aspect of my life.
Yeah.
So
I'm getting
full
body chills while you're talking
yeah.
about that, too.
Yes.
And
So we're working on that by using belief blasters.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of your modalities that you use to help
yeah.
uproot these beliefs from the subconscious. But I also use the Click Track, which mm-hmm. you have as part of your program.
Right.
And these things have helped me. I can feel it. I think we were talking about now, yeah. halfway through my sessions, I feel positive energy coming in.
Mm.
Instead of through the whole session just crying through the right. whole track. Now right. I'm upset in the first half, and then I can feel lighter, way lighter in the second half.
Yeah.
And things that used to trigger me based off of feeling unwanted, like someone not texting me back within an hour or any way of just feeling unwanted, no longer trigger me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazing how well that works.
Right.
And all the books I've read, all the YouTube videos mm-hmm. and guided meditations would work for 24 hours. But then 2 days later, boom, triggered.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how I kept feeling too. Like,
yeah.
you know, I'd feel a little bit better or I'd feel better temporarily, but... yeah, a couple of things on that. So
mm-hmm.
any of these tools that I work with, they work better and better the more you use them. They work mm-hmm. more quickly the more you use them, and you also start to have epiphanies the more you use them.
Yeah.
So you'll suddenly understand why you had to struggle with that problem or where it came from or what the root memory of it is.
That's where I'm at. Epiphanies like crazy.
Yeah. Or even what you can do about the problem or what the other person's side of the story is or mm-hmm. whatever. Like, all of these great awarenesses start to show up. And even with belief blasters, it's like, if you're working on not quite the root belief,
yep,
the root belief will show up while you're working on something that's near it.
I've had that in one of my, yeah, that's happened to me. And I'm like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with what I'm focused on right now. But wait a second, it does.
Yeah, yeah. It's just way deeper in there than the surface one I was just working on.
Yeah, yeah. And what I love about your tracks is that I download them to my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter where I am, like I was just in Costa Rica and I had some stuff happen to me and I'm able to just like, if I'm in the airport, I can run to the bathroom and listen to it really quick and use it to calm down. And
yeah.
Or if you're at home and you're getting a fight with a loved one, you can just mm-hmm. go lock yourself in your room and practice these. And it's just, they've been lifesavers.
I tell people a lot, like if you're about to have an argument with your spouse or you're about to go off on your kids, just be like, give me 10 minutes.
I'll be right back. Hold that thought.
Yeah, go in the other room, have a tantrum while you play the track, and then you come back and you're more level-headed and able to just deal with it without all the emotions underneath it.
Yep.
And the other thing that I wanted to bring up was the whole unwanted thing was the root of all of my problems, too, because the whole reason I was unhappy in my love life at that time was because the honeymoon phase wasn't just going on forever and ever and ever.
It wasn't a fairy tale. It wasn't a twin flame dream.
Right. Yeah. And the need for that honeymoon phase just to go on forever is related to that wanting someone to constantly be proving they want you.
Yep.
So
that is so important
that's
to people here.
What it was for me was just I needed whoever I was with to just be constantly proving they wanted me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did the same thing. I cleared it. I was using the click tracks to clear it, which is for emotional undoing, like any kind of anything that is a trigger to you and the emotional response you have to that trigger get disconnected with the click tracks. So basically what you're doing is taking this feeling of being unwanted or the whole trigger of being unwanted and your emotional response to that and unplugging those by acknowledging both at the same time. But it was really about acknowledging the whole history of unwanted
of
and not just what was going on in the current relationship.
Now, how far did it go back for you?
It was birth as well.
It was
my mom discovered she was pregnant with me and she was 17 and so she did not want to be pregnant.
Of course, the first feeling when she sees that test is, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right. Yeah.
Same here.
And I think what people don't understand is that if I don't hold a grudge about that or I'm not consciously hurt by the fact that my mom didn't want to have a baby at 17.
Yeah, we should talk about that because I posted about parents. And for anyone listening to this who is a parent, it's tough. I tip my hat to you. You're doing the best you can. I'm not a parent yet, but I can't even imagine. But I just don't want people to feel bad if they're listening to this and they had an unplanned pregnancy. I don't want them to think, oh, shit, is my child going to feel unwanted?
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So here's the thing about that.
Yeah.
No matter how good a parent you are, you're going to mess your kids up.
let it happen. Yes,
because...
Oh, we talked about this. You're going to traumatize them when you take away their toy.
Yeah, like, you know, if a toddler's playing with something dangerous and you take that away from them, that's traumatic to them. Mm-hmm. They don't understand why you're taking that from them, but they're hurt from that. And they, you know, they decide something about themselves or the world because of that. If you leave them to cry it out, they think that's about them. And there's nothing you can do about that. And sometimes, in order to be a good parent, you have to do those things.
Yep.
And so sometimes you're going to screw up your kids. Now, if you're a bad parent... then you're really going to mess them up.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone is going to traumatize their children, even in the name of good parenting. Mm-hmm. So I really wouldn't worry too much about it.
Don't lose sleep over, did I just traumatize my child?
Right.
Are they going to need therapy? We all need therapy. We all need help with our emotional health. But I worry some people have a fear of that. Mm-hmm. Have I already ruined my child because I went through a divorce? Or
I got a question the other day from a client who's, you know, been coming to see me for a while now, and I had mentioned the whole, like, leaving them to cry it out and them being traumatized by that. And it was in the name of helping her deal with something, you know, herself feeling unheard or ignored or something like that. And so we were covering it in that context. But now she's got young children that she sometimes has to leave to cry it out in order to train them to sleep on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So she was questioning me as to, like, is that going to mess them up? Is that okay? Is it, you know, and I'm like, I don't tell people that so that they won't do that to their own kids. Like, something we do is going to mess our kids up, and there's no avoiding that. The best you can do is show them love and respect and do your best to explain to them why you're doing what you can. But when they're so little,
you can't avoid
it. The only thing you can do is, like, pour loving energy on them while you're traumatizing them. But I love you, but I'm going to let you cry. You know, I love you, but I'm taking that poisonous toy out of your mouth right now.
No.
You know,
good to know.
Yeah.
Because I can't wait to be a parent.
But... yeah, I mean, you can't really, right now, do anything about the fact that you don't want a pregnancy or that your baby needs to be left to cry it out maybe to learn to sleep on their own or that, you know, you got to rip a toy out of their hands once in a while.
Or maybe you have to leave a relationship and split up from their mother or father.
Right, yeah, and yeah, divorce even. I really think that most of the time... divorce is probably the best thing.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
That I look back at it now.
If you're not happy in that relationship and you guys are at each other and arguing all the time, you can't stand each other, or you're just seething with resentment even if you're not fighting, the kids can feel that and they see that, and that's not what you want to teach them.
I can see the microphone glowing. Like, yes, say this.
That's not what you want to teach them to settle for in their lives. And that's not what you want to teach them is a loving relationship.
Yep, that's right. And they're subconsciously absorbing that.
Right.
Okay.
And they're feeling all of it.
Even and during good times. Yeah, that energy is still in your home.
Even if you're putting a nice fake smile on every day and pretending that everything is fine, they feel what's going on under that.
Yep, especially children. They're so susceptible to that energy. Okay, the last hot topic I want to question you about is, this is why I love you so much, on top of all the other 50 reasons, but I can talk to you about my twin flame, and we can talk about karmic relationships and synchronicities, like repeating numbers and astrology. It's just so nice to have an emotional health consultant who I can talk to about twin flames. I kept my twin flame to myself for years, thinking I was nuts, I was crazy, I was doing something inappropriate or weird. And with you, it's like, oh, I've experienced that. I get it. And I really think that half of the clients that come from this are going to be people like, help me with my twin flame. So what are your thoughts on the twin flame relationship? Where to begin?
Yeah, exactly. It's very complicated.
It's
you know, to me, a twin flame is another aspect of the same soul. And it's just, you know, you've had... a different, like, the soul expression that you are right now has had many different experiences, and this other part of the same soul has had all of these other experiences in different bodies. Yes,
like same experience, different bodies, or
different bodies, different experiences.
Oh,
so they've had all these other things happen, you've had all these other things happen, so it's kind of a way for your soul to have, like, a whole lot of experiences. So now these two parts of one soul are meeting in the same lifetime. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is happening right now because of the shift that's happening on the planet right now.
Yeah.
So with the shift that's happening on the planet right now, and the vibrational frequency of the Earth is raising, and we're trying to create all this change right now.
Yeah.
All the twin flames are meeting up.
To assist in that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so part of it is that when twin flames meet, we trigger each other.
Big time.
Yes. So whatever it is that we have left to deal with of our own crap, the twin flame is going to bring that up and put it right in our faces. And it's going to be horribly uncomfortable.
To put it mildly.
So that's what a twin flame does. Yep. And regardless of whether you stay together forever or you meet for 5 minutes and both of you run in the opposite directions, you they are both that. Now triggered.
And
you're going
for
to
life.
Have to, yes, you're going to have to deal with your stuff. Or you're going to spend the rest of your life freaking out and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And some people choose that. Some people just choose, like, okay, I guess I'm going to be uncomfortable and suffer the rest of my life.
Whew.
Yeah.
Now, are twin flames meant to be together? Like, is that like your fairy tale Prince Charming or
That's
Princess?
The ideal situation, but both people have to be willing to buckle down and do the work for that to happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, yep. It's just, you know, toxic and awful and abusive and disruptive, and nobody needs to put everything into trying to make that happen.
Yeah, and we talked about that before in our sessions, is sometimes you're meant to be with your twin flame, but other times one of them is not putting in the work, so then it becomes really abusive really quick.
Well,
very toxic.
What I see most often with twin flame relationships is that you meet, and one of you is on the path and doing the work.
Spiritual work.
Yeah. And like way into all of this stuff. And the other one is maybe a little interested in it or is completely like not into any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And looks down on it or, you know, just doesn't get it. And it's usually that person who unconsciously feels what's going on and knows that something different has happened when they've met this twin flame person. Like, they feel something click, and they freak out, because unconsciously they know they're about to be triggered, and something big is about to go down, and it's scary as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're flipping out, and they run for the hills.
Yep.
They don't even know why they're running for the hills. They just, it's too intense, or, oh, I've got these other things I need to do, or whatever. And so they're running off.
Yep.
Or doing things to sabotage the relationship.
The
or they're ghosting you,
phase.
Or whatever. And you know, you're sitting there going, we're supposed to be together
forever, happily ever after. Where are you going? And sometimes they'll, like, chase after that.
Right.
What do you think of the runner-chaser phase?
Well, you know, everybody makes their choices.
Yeah.
And I've seen it a lot. I've seen a lot of people going through that. And honestly, move on and do something else. That person may or may not come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's really, really hard.
Yes.
To walk away from that.
Because
it feels amazing.
The connection is magnetic.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know it feels so good when you first meet that person. And it's like nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
Yep.
But you can clear that, too.
You
can
deal
with that.
Yes, you can use
one
of your tools.
Level. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be dealt with, too. Whatever pain or longing or whatever that you have, that can be dealt with. And it can be re-put in if you want it again later when the person resurfaces. But you don't want to spend the rest of your life pining for that person.
No, especially a lot of people are going after someone who's already married or in a relationship. I don't know if that's like a twin flame thing. Like people...
Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
I think a lot of times what happens is, you know, if you're just going about your life. And like you said, all of our intuitive abilities get turned off and we're not taught to pay attention to any of that stuff. And so we just kind of live as society expects us to live. So we meet someone and we think we're supposed to get married at a certain age. And so we get married and we may not even be in love with them. They might be our safety guy or they might, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just kind of going about our lives. And that actually happened to me.
Me too.
I was married to my safety guy. And he was my high school sweetheart. We were together for a really long time, had a wonderful son together, and then I met my wife.
Yeah.
And poof, the whole world blew up.
Is she your
twin
flame?
It was just like, holy crap. Well, I think she probably is my twin flame, because there was a little bit of that running and all of that in the beginning. There was like a, like, holy crap, this is so amazing, and oh my gosh, I don't know if I can handle this. And to top it off, I was married, so.
Yeah, I find so many people meet them when they're married or in a committed partnership. It's really bizarre. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it happens to totally just slap you awake. Like, you are not following your truth because you're married to someone you're not authentically aligned with.
Right. Yeah. So it often happens that you've already just been going about your life and doing your thing, and then, hello, here's a twin flame. And
to shake, turn your world upside down.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, then you have to go through the battle of the conscience of, what does society expect me to do? What does my religion expect me to do? Is it right or wrong for me to end my marriage? I made this promise, and then, but I feel this thing. So I know what my head expects and what is expected of me, but I know what my heart wants.
Yes.
And so how am I supposed to decide between these two things, and what will people think, and how will I, you know, get over that?
And that's when you call April Adams. Right away.
Oh, goodness, yeah. And I went through a good year of debating that myself. And that was
tough.
That was a year of hell.
Yep.
Because I was, like, constantly going back and forth between, who do I choose? What do I choose? Do I go with my head? Do I go with my heart?
Yeah.
What's right and what's wrong?
So many people are going to resonate with that right there. So many.
Mm-hmm.
It's so lonely.
Yeah.
Because you don't even feel like you can tell your friends, even. Like, what are they going to think? Are they going to tell me I'm nuts for feeling how I feel?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I love talking to you. Because I can't even talk to some of my friends about twin flame stuff without them being like,
he's so toxic,
you're crazy. But you're a safe space to talk about that. So for anyone listening, let's wrap it up and share with them how they can contact you. So April's website is apriladdams.org. You can find her on Facebook at facebook.com/AdamsApril. As well as facebook.com/consultapril. Lynn, do you want to share anything about your programs? Or?
Sure. So basically what I like to
do
is...
You do long distance, because a lot of people listening are not in New Hampshire. That's where we're at, by the way, Bedford, New Hampshire.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can meet in my office in Bedford, New Hampshire, if that's where you're near. But I do Skype and Zoom and FaceTime consults and sessions as well, phone sessions if needed. So... those are also possibilities. Yeah. And typically what I do is I work with people through packages.
Yeah.
So we have a very specific amount of time that we're working together. You get a very specific set of tools, and basically you get everything that you need to do the work that I'm going to recommend that we do.
Yep.
And the length of time we work together is just based on how severe are the issues you want to deal with, and how deeply do you want to dive, and how much of the homework are you willing to do on your own at home, or how much are you expecting to do in the office with me? So
And aren't they range from 6 months to 1 year?
Actually, it ranges from 3 months to a year, because if somebody just has like one trauma or one phobia or something like that, we can usually take care of that in like 3 sessions.
Yeah.
But there is also a 12 session package that we can do a year of work together, or, you know, whatever needs to happen, and there's a couple in between there too for the mid-range stuff. And basically, we do mainly the subconscious work and specifically customize that to whatever.
And you give people tools so they can download to their smartphones to use. With that is my favorite part, because I've done lots of counseling and therapy, and it's talking, but then I go home and I don't. That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
With you, it's like, oh no.
One thing I do want to specify about that, though, is a lot of these downloads have to be done directly to a computer first, and then they have to be sunk up to a
phone. I'm tech savvy, so everything's on my phone.
So, yeah, if you're tech savvy, it's super easy. If you're not, or you don't have a computer, you might have a little bit of difficulty getting some of the tools, because they need to be downloaded onto a regular computer before you can get them onto your mobile devices.
And with your programs, you offer, correct me if I'm wrong, but a free consultation just to see if you guys click and you work well together before they enroll in a package. Right?
Yeah. So that session is usually just kind of talking about, what does their life look like? What has their life looked like up until now? What are their challenges?
Okay.
What would they like their life to look like, you know, in 6 months or a year from now?
Yep.
And being able to set goals and being able to look at, what are the problems, what are the roots, and then If we have time during that visit, sometimes I'll walk people through some kind of exercise to clear something.
Oh, wow.
So depending on the amount of time that we have left our initial discussion, I sometimes do that.
Yeah.
And then we talk about which package would be best for you. Yeah. And, you know, as of right now, they're pretty affordable. So
yes, they are. They are the best investment ever in your mental health, because it changes your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So I say investment for a reason, because right. Your whole life is changed after using these tools and working with you. So that's apriladdams.org, and sign up for a free initial consultation and see if you guys vibe and click together. It'll change your life. April, thank you so much for working with me and for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. It's been really fun chatting.
Yeah. All right, everyone. I will see you next Wednesday on the show. Goodbye.